Hey there everyone, and welcome back to MedTalks. I'm Saho Nijani and I'm currently a junior doctor working in the East Midlands. This episode is part of the Finals Countdown series, where we are providing medical students with short, succinct and super useful revision talks for upcoming exams. At the moment, we're working our way through the gastrointestinal system, and so far we've covered gastroenteritis and C. diff colitis, which are both available for free on podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and many more. Now, before we get into this episode, I'd just like to take a moment to talk about the sponsors, and they are Wesleyan. Wesleyan is a company that was set up way back in 1841, and they provide tailored financial advice and products to multiple professional groups, including doctors, dentists, and teachers. I'd like to just touch on Wesleyan's latest project called The Next Step. The Next Step is born from the Wesleyan tradition of giving back. Built in collaboration with final year students, The Next Step brings together some of the brightest sparks in medicine for live events, workshops, exam resources, content, and podcasts to make the step into F1 a little easier. They address subject matter you didn't know you needed to know. So go on over and follow them on Instagram by searching The Wes Next Step, or Facebook by searching The Next Step-Wesleyan, or visit their website by entering thenextstep.wesleyan.co.uk. Right then, let's get back to the episode. Today, I'm going to be talking about gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GORD. So let's get started. Gastroesophageal reflux disease is a very common GI condition where there is prolonged or excessive reflux of acid in the stomach and the esophagus. Now, a small amount of acid is normal and acts as a natural protective mechanism. This acid travels up from the stomach into the esophagus and it causes various symptoms which we will discuss shortly. It is 2 to 3 times more common in men. And sometimes GORD symptoms can be quite confusing and feel similar to cardiac chest pain. But first, why does it happen? So there are numerous reasons and numerous predisposing risk factors, which include increased intra-abdominal pressure, so in conditions like obesity and even pregnancy, lower esophageal sphincter hypotension, so that's where the lower esophageal sphincter, which is responsible for keeping the esophagus closed after food enters into the stomach, that's more relaxed than normal. Loss of esophageal peristaltic function, gastric acid hypersecretion, slow gastric emptying, other dietary factors, so excessive alcohol, fat and coffee intake can all relax the lower esophageal sphincter, as can smoking, a hiatus hernia. This can increase the risk, although not everyone with a hiatus hernia will get GORD. And medications, including antidepressants, calcium channel blockers, and nitrates. These relax the tone of the cardiac sphincter, which is a circular muscle located at the distal end of the esophagus. It relaxes to allow the passage of ingested food into the stomach, and it constricts so that the contents of the stomach do not move back into the esophagus. In GORD, the normal squamous epithelium on the lower end of the esophagus may become replaced by a columnar epithelium, which is usually found within the stomach, and this is called Barrett's esophagus, and we'll talk more about this later. Okay, so how do patients with GORD present? Well, the esophageal symptoms are heartburn, so this is a burning retrosternal discomfort, which is usually worse post-meal, lying flat on a bed, stooping, straining, and it gets relieved by antacids. We experience this pain due to the acidic effect on the esophageal mucosa, which is quite sensitive. Other symptoms may be water brash, and this is where you get increased salivation due to the excessive acid within the esophagus, frequent belching, acid brash, so this is acid or bile regurgitation, and odynophagia. This is painful swallowing if there is a degree of esophagitis. So this is inflammation of the esophageal lining secondary to the effects of the acid on the esophageal mucosa. Acid reflux into the mouth can cause breakdown of the enamel, especially on the inside surface of the teeth, and so a dry mouth, acid or burning sensation within the mouth, bad breath, and redness of the palate may occur. And then there are extra esophageal symptoms, so nocturnal asthma, a chronic cough and choking as the acid irritates the larynx, and it causes laryngitis, which can lead to hoarseness and frequent clearing of the throat. And non-cardiac chest pain, so GERD is the cause in 50% of patients with chest pain and normal coronary angiography. So those are the main symptoms of GERD. Now we need to think about how we're going to investigate for it. It's really important to rule out the most sinister cause of these symptoms, which would be an upper GI malignancy. So the NICE guideline suggests an urgent referral for suspected upper GI cancer if the following are present. Dysphagia, so this is difficulty swallowing at any age. Dyspepsia at any age, plus any of the alarm symptoms, which are weight loss, anemia, and vomiting. Dyspepsia in a patient 55 years or older, with at least one of the following high-risk features. Onset of dyspepsia less than 1 year previously. Continuous symptoms since onset. Also, dyspepsia with at least one of the following known risk factors. So a family history of upper GI cancer in more than two first-degree relatives. Barrett's esophagitis. So Barrett's esophagitis is a precancerous condition where, as I mentioned before, the lining of the esophagus becomes more like the lining of the small intestine and the stomach, usually secondary to acid exposure from the stomach after years of GERD. Other known risk factors are pernicious anemia, peptic ulcer surgery 20 years ago, jaundice, an upper abdominal mass, known dysplasia, atrophic gastritis, or intestinal metaplasia. So the patients with any of these features will need an urgent referral to the gastroenterology team for further investigation and workup, which will include blood tests and an endoscopy. Patients who present with dyspepsia and acute upper GI bleed will need an immediate referral to the gastroenterology specialist team for further management. So for those patients who present with dyspepsia and they don't need a referral because they don't have any of the worrying signs suggestive of an upper GI malignancy, then the first step would be to review any medications that are possibly causing this dyspepsia, such as calcium channel blockers, NSAIDs, steroids, nitrates or bisphosphonates. Offering lifestyle advice such as healthy eating, weight reduction, smoking cessation, avoiding trigger foods such as coffee, chocolate, spicy foods, fizzy drinks. Over-the-counter medications such as Gaviscon can be trialled. Gaviscon forms a protective barrier across the top of the stomach contents soon after they've made contact with stomach acid, and is often all patients really need to help with their reflux symptoms. If there is a response to this, then that's great, and patients can keep doing that, keep self-caring. If there's no response or if there is a relapse, then the NICE guidelines suggest to offer a full dose PPI, so that's either omeprazole or lansoprazole for 1 month. If there is a response, then either to continue with this or patients can return to self-care. But if there is no response or a relapse, then that's when we need to think about investigating for other causes. So doing the carbon-13 urea breath test to look for any evidence of H. pylori disease. So if we have an adult patient with uninvestigated dyspepsia, then we need to offer H. pylori testing. And it's important to ensure that if patients have already been started on a proton pump inhibitor such as lansoprazole or omeprazole, then these must be stopped 2 weeks prior to the breath test to ensure accurate results. So H. pylori or Helicobacter pylori is a bacteria that commonly infects the lining of the stomach and the duodenum, and it causes peptic ulcer disease, which is another differential diagnosis for the previously mentioned symptoms. The way we detect H. pylori is by the urea breath test. So a patient is given a drink containing 13 carbon labelled urea rather than the normal 12 carbon. The H. pylori, if it's present, will produce the enzyme urease, and this hydrolyzes the labelled urea to carbon dioxide and ammonia. The exhaled labelled carbon dioxide is then dissolved in the blood and transported to the lungs and analysed. H. pylori will therefore increase the ratio of 13 carbon dioxide to 12 carbon dioxide, and this gives evidence of active infection. If patients have a positive urea breath test, then they should be offered H. pylori eradication treatment, which usually consists of a 7-day course of a proton pump inhibitor, amoxicillin, and either clarithromycin or metronidazole. But this will depend on the patient's allergies and tolerances to those antibiotics. We will have a separate talk all about peptic ulcer disease, so do stay tuned for that one. But back to gastroesophageal reflux. If, despite the previously mentioned measures, patients still have ongoing reflux-type symptoms, then we should do an endoscopy to confirm the diagnosis. If the endoscopy shows esophagitis, we need to think about whether it's severe or if it's not severe. If it's not severe, then we give patients a full dose PPI for 1 to 2 months. And if they've responded after this, then we can reduce the dose and continue them on a low dose PPI for as long as they need it. If there's no response to the PPI, the full dose PPI, or there's a relapse, then we should double the dose of the PPI for 1 month. If again there's no response, then we can add in an histamine 2 receptor antagonist such as ranitidine for 1 month. And if there is a response to this, then we try and go back to the low dose treatment as the patient requires it. If the endoscopy shows severe grade esophagitis, then a full dose PPI should be given to patients for 8 weeks. If symptoms persist, then a full or higher dose PPI should be given for a further 8 weeks. And if symptoms continue to persist, then patients will need a referral to a specialist, so a gastroenterologist. If the severe grade esophagitis symptoms improve after the initial 8 weeks, then we should continue the patient on a full dose PPI as they require it. And if the endoscopy shows negative reflux disease, then we give patients a full dose PPI for 1 month. If there's a response, then we put them onto a low dose treatment as required and regularly review this. If there's no response, then we try a histamine 2 receptor antagonist for a month. And if they respond to this, then again they go back to the low dose treatment as required. But if there's no response, then they'll need further review and potentially referral to the specialist care. Now, other investigations that can be done to identify GORD but are not as routinely performed compared to an endoscopy are a barium swallow test. So this is a special type of imaging which uses barium and x-rays to get images of the upper GI tract. So that's the back of the mouth, the throat or the pharynx, and your esophagus. And this helps to identify any possible hiatus hernias which are contributing to the reflux symptoms. In terms of blood tests, well, full blood count would be useful to exclude any anemia, and anemia may be due to ongoing blood loss due to the esophagitis. Patients in whom the endoscopy and or the radiology investigations have not really been conclusive and the GORD has not been definitively diagnosed, then esophageal manometry and pH monitoring can be considered. And the manometry basically tests to check that the nerves and the muscles of the esophagus are functioning properly, and also measuring the pH within the esophagus, so the amount and the severity of the acidic stomach contents that might be leaking up from the stomach into the esophagus. And it's usually taken for a 24-hour period, so we can see what happens after patients' meals and at nights when they're asleep. And it will show us how well the symptoms are related to the presence of acid within the stomach. As always, it's important to consider the differential diagnoses. So this could be esophagitis secondary to medications, as I previously alluded to before, such as NSAIDs. So it's always important to ask the patient's medication history. Infection, peptic ulcer disease, which we've talked briefly about. A GI malignancy, which we've also talked about how to investigate for that. And esophageal spasms. And if medical treatment doesn't work, then there's always a surgical option. So there's something called a Nissen fundoplication, where the gastric fundus is wrapped around the lower part of the esophagus and stitched into place to reinforce the closing function of the lower esophageal sphincter. And this aims to increase the resting lower esophageal pressure, and it's considered in severe GORD if the drugs are not working. Now, with this procedure, it can come undone in about 5 to 10% of cases, which may lead to a recurrence. It may also lead to dysphagia if the fundus is wrapped around too tight. It can lead to bloating because it can cause the stomach to hold on to too much gas, and it may lead to a paraesophageal herniation. Finally, I'll just touch on some of the complications of GORD. Patients with GORD for many years can go on to develop Barrett's esophagus, which I've spoken about before, and this is a premalignant ectopic gastric mucosa, a benign esophageal stricture due to long-standing esophagitis, which will present as dysphagia that's worse for solids than liquids, anemia secondary to bleeding due to long-term esophagitis, and esophageal webs may form as well. So esophageal webs are essentially thin membranes that grow across the inside of the upper part of the esophagus, and they may lead to dysphagia or difficulty swallowing. And these are a known complication of prolonged reflux disease. Right, I think that's about time to bring the episode to an end. Today we've talked all about gastroesophageal reflux disease. We've talked about the risk factors for it, so mainly lower esophageal sphincter hypotension and the things that can contribute to that. We've talked about how patients with reflux may present. We've also looked at how we diagnose it and exclude other more sinister causes. We've looked at the different investigations, and then we've moved on to how we manage GORD, so going from lifestyle measures to simple over-the-counter medications, and then the prescribed medications such as PPIs and histamine antagonists. And then finally we looked at some of the complications. I hope you found this episode useful. Please remember to share them with your friends and your peers who may also find them useful. Leave us your reviews, and we'd really appreciate it if you could drop a comment on the Apple Podcast platforms to let us know how you're finding them. Subscribe to our channels, follow us on social media, so just search MedTalks on Instagram, Facebook or LinkedIn for more updates, and we'll see you shortly for the next episode. You can check out all of our other episodes in gastroenterology and also other systems such as cardiology, respiratory, neurology. These are all available for free on the Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify and many other podcast platforms. Thank you for listening and goodbye.